Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review presents with Donovan and Ken.
So today, at the end of 2024, we're all caught up on our Star Trek reading, so we're doing Farscape today.
Right. December 29th, 2024. I forgot to mention that in the opening, but yes, Farscape. So we're presenting Farscape, which is great. Farscape Wartorn.
Right. This is the first miniseries of Farscape, and actually the only one that DC did before it eventually went on to Boom Comics.
Well, when you look at this, it also mentions Wildstorm. So
Wildstorm somehow was a subsidiary of DC.
Right, right. I know that, but okay. Because you see it referred to as Wildstorm a lot in the book.
Yeah, which it technically is, yeah.
So, Wildstorm DC, there you go.
Right, yeah, DC was using Wildstorm to publish all the Star Trek books, the Farscape book, you know, all their licensed stuff. They would use the Wildstorm.
In this time period.
At this time, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, right. Which is later from all the Star Trek DC stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, and this book came out when season 4 of the TV show was coming out. So just to kind of...
Oh, cool.
I think technically it takes place before season 4, but when it came out, season 4 was still on TV.
Yeah. So April 2002. Okay, I guess that makes sense. Right. Well, that's cool that they were having... I mean, while the show was still on, a lot of times they have these things after the series has already run its course.
Right. I guess technically maybe this came out in between season 3 and 4, because I guess season 4 didn't start until June of 2002.
Right.
So, anyways, it's just kind of cool.
I loved Farscape. I really enjoyed the show, but it was one of those syndicated things, you know. It didn't get to the popularity level of a lot of other franchises. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. The only thing is, as time went on, it was getting... I think they were starting to run out of ideas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the first couple of seasons, it was always that one peacekeeper, captain, or whatever his rank was, with the dark hair, that Crichton accidentally killed his brother.
Right. Was it Crasis or something?
Something like that. Yeah. So in the first couple seasons, it was like always, you know, is that guy going to get him, you know, because they're always chasing after him. And then he switched to being kind of a good guy. And then they put Scorpius in, who was excellent, excellent bad guy, really nasty looking thing. And then after that, it just seemed to run out of steam.
Right.
So I think they ended it at the right time.
Well, I think they wanted to go more, but I think they weren't getting the money for the budgets and stuff.
Yeah. Sounds like Star Trek.
Towards that last season.
Sounds like season 3 of Star Trek.
Yeah. And when was this on at the same time as Enterprise? So were they kind of, you know, I know they were on different networks, but were they kind of coming out at the same time? And I don't know. Enterprise didn't do very well either.
So
that was a bad time for sci-fi on TV.
Yeah, I know Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine came out at the same time. Similar ideas. There was kind of a little competition there, which is ridiculous because both were great series. But yeah, so I guess this came out later. I guess that could have been the same time as Enterprise.
Yeah, Enterprise. Perhaps. Enterprise started in 2001. So.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So this was started a little earlier than Enterprise, but they would have been on at the same time.
Contemporaries of each other.
I know that when
Enterprise was getting canceled, there was talk of it moving from CW or WUPN, whatever it was called at the time, over to Sci-Fi. But
Sci-Fi Channel?
Yeah, which is where Farscape was being shown at. Mm-hmm. But from what I read, the only reason why they didn't do it is that they had already destroyed all the sets. But that's what I've heard, is that at the end of season four of Enterprise, they destroyed the sets, and then Sci-Fi said that they would bring it over. They, you know, were told that they would have to rebuild all the sets, and they just too expensive.
Too much. Hmm.
Interesting. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've always heard.
Well, if that's what happened, that's a big oops.
Yeah. Hmm. Would have been bad. I mean, it would have been so cool to have a continuation.
Right.
But anyways, but so Farscape, four seasons, then it was canceled, and then it came back for a two-movie miniseries, and then we've never seen it since. No, yeah, no revivals, no animated movies.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then the two stars, main stars, went off to being on Stargate. And then Guardians of the Galaxy. At least Ben Browder. And
who was he in Guardians of the Galaxy?
You know those gold people? In the second one? Yeah, he was one of the gold colored people.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I think he was actually one of the guys that was trying to, you know, operate one of those remote controlled attack craft that were firing on the Guardian ship.
Oh, that's funny.
Anywho,
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's like, hey, that's John Crichton in a lot of gold makeup.
I know that Claudia Black, who's the other one you were talking about. Mm-hmm. She was in a couple episodes of Ahsoka recently.
Oh no! What, really? Oh
yeah.
Lord. Okay, so as what? What was she? She looked normal, or was she an alien?
I think she was an alien. I don't know. I remember watching it, saying, "Oh yeah, that she looks familiar."
Oh wow! But, so you could recognize her. Oh boy, I feel bad now.
Was one of the Night Sisters. So I think she was on that. Well, did you watch it? So you watched it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched it.
She was on the planet in the other galaxy.
Okay, so she was part of
that little trio.
But other than the lead person that was talking to
Thrawn. No, she wasn't the lead.
Thrawn.
Yeah, she was one of the other witches.
Okay, but they didn't say much, did they?
No,
I remember a lot of dialogue
chanting and whatnot. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to look after we get done recording. I'm going to go and look. I always liked her.
Yeah, I did too.
The first thing, I thought she was really good in Pitch Black? That Vin Diesel one.
Oh, I didn't know she was in that. That's cool.
Yeah, she was one of the, the crew people that end up getting killed.
Hmm.
Which, considering what Vin Diesel and like maybe one other person survived in that whole movie. So she was one of the people that got chopped up.
Hmm.
That's the first place I saw her. But
that's cool. So anyways, yeah, a lot of these people ended up doing other sci-fi stuff.
Right.
I don't think any of them ever ended up going back to Star Trek. So that's too bad. Would have been cool to see them in Star Trek. Any.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Because obviously Farscape owes a lot to Star Trek. I mean, I always thought that Farscape felt like what if Star Wars and Star Trek had a baby, it would be Farscape.
Okay, but like Firefly, I mean, this was just an independent group of folks in a ship. This wasn't And the closest thing to like Starfleet and the Federation were the peacekeepers.
Were the bad guys, yeah.
Were the bad guys.
That's true.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's good.
So these
books.
So there's two of them, the two issues. Each issue has two stories. a long story, which is most of it, like 75% of it is the main story, which is the war-torn story. Then there's a shorter story, two-parter also, which is focused on Chiana, one of the characters. And we are just going to be focused on war-torn because, quite frankly, these are long books.
Right. And I think, I mean, if you're listening to this, I don't know if anybody is, but if you're listening to this and you're a big Star Trek fan and you don't know who Farscape is, I mean, we're not going to spend a lot of time giving every character's backstory or whatever. So keep that in mind. You might not know who we're talking about.
I do my best in the synopsis to give a little something just to remind you, because I had to be reminded a little bit because I knew who Crichton was. No problem there. And Aaron, I knew who she was. I knew who everybody was, but you know their exact names. So Spanky, you know, Dominar, Rigel. I forgot what his name was completely. So I had to kind of remind myself a little bit. And in doing it, I put a little extra in the synopsis.
All right, cool.
So a little info, but yeah, there's a lot about them. The good thing about the book is most of the characters are true to what they were in the series. So that's good. So Rigel was always kind of a scheming ex-monarch who was used to having everything his own way and would have his little scams going. Well, he's got something like that going on here. And then Chiana was always the sexy little thief. And she's that here. And anyway. Really, I don't think Aaron and Dargo had a lot. They weren't given much.
Right. Agreed.
In these stories, unfortunately, but.
Nah, they're just there.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Well, shall we jump into the first one?
Let's get going. Because my synopsis is a tad long, but there's a lot of details, a lot of ins and outs going on here. And sometimes if you don't give enough information about some of the ins and outs, when you get to an important point later in the story, it's like, where'd that come from?
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, let's do it.
Let's go. Published date of War Torn, issue number one, April 2002. And this particular book chapter is called Chapter One, Rocks and Hard Places. And the creative team is writer Marv Wolfman, pencils Robert Tiranishi. Yeah, I guess that's it. Probably isn't. Inks, Keith Aiken and Al Gordon. Colorist, Jerome Cox and Wildstorm FX. Letterer, Robbie Robbins for RDW. Interesting. Editor, Neural J. Posner. The cover is just, it's like a photo montage kind of thing. So they pulled together pictures from the TV show. Front and center is astronaut John Crichton, or ex-astronaut, I guess, John Crichton, pointing his two Peacekeeper pulse pistols at the reader. In the background, we see ex-Peacekeeper officer Aaron Sun, the ultimate bad guy, in my opinion, Scorpius, one of my favorite bad guys from the show, the always sexy Chiana, and always annoying Dominar Rigel the 16th. Moya, a living sentient ship, is traveling through the uncharted territories. Inside her is John Crichton, a former astronaut from a place called Earth, Ka Dargo, an imposing Luxan warrior, and Dominar Rigel the 16th, who are all discussing their food situation, which is summed up by saying they're almost out of it. John asks where's a good replicator when you need one, and is greeted with blank looks. The human is on again about fantasy things that don't exist. Crichton goes to his quarters where he thinks of his father back on Earth, who looks a lot like a cop with a really healthy head of hair. He thinks about the accident that brought him into his current situation while piloting Farscape 1, an experimental ship of his own design. Crichton suddenly feels cold and contacts Pilot, who confirms Moya's temperature controls are malfunctioning. Crichton is called to Zan's quarters, where he finds Aaron trying to comfort Zan, who is a 10th level Delvian Pau, who is freezing cold at the moment. Dargo forcibly takes Rigel's blanket, from the complaining former Dominar and wraps Zan up with it. Just in time, Pilot reports they are entering a system with three habitable worlds, one tropical, one industrial, and the third lifeless. Crichton calls the game plan. He and Chiana will take Zan down in a shuttle to the tropical planet to warm her up and find food, while the rest of the crew will go to the industrial planet to find the needed parts to fix Moya's life support system. Later, on the tropical planet, Zan states she is warming up slowly. They come upon a group of the planet's residents, who they say hi to. Zan is rather forward and does a mind meld with one of the locals named Tula. They instantly know each other and form a bond. Crichton asks about where they can obtain food, and Tula agrees to provide them with whatever provisions they need. She frets that the rest of their crew will likely not enjoy a warm welcome from the people of the industrial planet of Garanji. Crichton blows off the warning since Aaron and Dargo are badasses and asks, what's for dinner? Meanwhile, on Garanji, Aaron, Dargo, and Rigel are walking through one of their dirty, stinking city streets, getting the lay of the land. Aaron wisely cautions her companions to fly under the radar, given the size and well-armed citizenry they are surrounded by. Not one for taking advice, Rigel states that most of them look like soldiers who are mindless and know the pecking order. He accosts a big one, stating who he is and that he is Dominar of over 6 billion subjects. The citizen indeed seems to be buying Rigel's BS, addresses him as sire, and asks what he can do for the great Rigel. Later, while eating, Rigel spouts off about how the Garanji leadership should be crushing the weaker Kaili people rather than signing a peace treaty with them. The grunt refers to his kind as being warrior people, so suing for peace is worse than defeat. After getting some food in them, Aaron and Dargo set off in search of the parts Moya's repairs require. Rigel is fine with it and says he does not need them. Rigel continues to brag about how he always led his people to victory. With fire in his eyes, the citizen says maybe Rigel should teach his people how to fight the Kaili. Meanwhile, Dargo and Aaron find out there will be a wait on the parts they need, so they go for a drink to kill some time. Tula offers to show them around her planet, but the girls take a pass, and only Crichton takes her up on the offer. During the walk, Tula's rebellious daughter, Talali, joins them. She states clearly that she disagrees with the peace process and thinks the Garanji will wipe them out. Talali recounts her people's history as slaves that were freed by a meek man named Cetus, who rose up and led them to freedom. Tula continues the story, saying they fled to the stars and wandered looking for a home until a voice spoke to them of a promised land and gave them a map, galactic, that guided them to Kaili. Tula disagrees and says the promised land was Tavira, and it was promised to them, not to the Garanji, who has denied them their true home for 1,000 cycles. The mother, Tala, says that Garanji say the voice spoke to them too, telling them Tavira was their promised land. The ladies argue when John cuts in, wanting to hear more about that map galactic thingy. He thinks it might show him a way back to Earth. They say they have no copy of it, and the original is on Tavira, but none can travel there, since they and the Garanji agreed none shall go there until the war is resolved. Suddenly, they are attacked by a Garanji flyer, and John is hit. Tula does a mind meld with John to take away his pain, which turns into some kind of a sexual encounter. Ooh la la. In front of the daughter and everything. Ookie. Meanwhile, Chiana encounters some locals that includes a guy named Knox, who turns out to be some kind of rebel leader. Meanwhile, on Grangie, Rigel is introduced to the higher-ups that offer Rigel anything to lead their people to victory. Rigel likes the sound of the word anything. Crichton opens up a six-way connection over comms to Rigel, Chiana, Zan, Dargo, and Aaron. He briefs them on the situation and tells them about the map Galactic that might get them all home, but it means they will need to stay a while. They decide to stay for a while longer. Nox and his followers accost Chiana with their sad story of death at the hands of the Grangie. He tries to get her to help their cause to defeat the Grangie by using their shuttle. Chiana takes a pass and leaves. A big, muscular, shadowy figure and his associates hanging around in some tree limbs say that they need to stop them or the peace treaty will be signed by week's end. The leader asks if the off-worlders suspect anything. The answer is no. The leader says it's time to proceed. Meanwhile, Crichton, Zahn, and Chiana are together again in time for a Grangie drone attack that kills Tala. Meanwhile, on Grangie, the Dominar is doing his best to train the Grangie troops that seem rather lethargic and incompetent. They receive word the Kaili have been the victims of a sneak attack, but the Grangie did not attack them. Rigel says they can take credit for it anyway. Talali arrives and cries over the death of her mother, Tula. Meanwhile in space, Dargo and Aaron are in Moya installing the new parts, but now life support is running hot. They return to Grangie before they cook. On their way out, Aaron asks Pilot to figure out what is going wrong and what Moya needs to fix her. They will get whatever Moya needs. They join Rigel, and Aaron chastises him for choosing sides in this war. It's not their war to get involved in. That gives Rigel an idea, and as soon as she and Dargo leave, Rigel contacts the Kaili and offers his services to train their soldiers for a price. Dargo contacts John, who tells him about the attack and that Tala is dead. Dargo finds it hard to believe the Grangie were capable of such an attack, given they had to get Rigel to teach them how to fight. Aaron tells John they are picking the last of the parts up for Moya, so they should be able to leave soon. After the channel is closed, the Grangie city comes under attack by drones that Aaron assumes is from Kaili. Dargo is wounded in the attack. They help a wounded Grangie who tells them their sad story of being persecuted and attacked by others until now they are a shell of their former warrior selves. Meanwhile, leaders from the Grangie and Kaili are assembled to sign the peace agreement, but instead are accusing each other of killing people on both sides. Chiana is shocked into unconsciousness by not only Nox, but also Talali. Apparently, they do not like to take no for an answer. The Grangie bring Rigel his payment. Chiana wakes to be tied up by Talali, who proceeds to do a mind meld on Chiana to find out where the shuttle is. Talali finishes the meld, saying she knows where the shuttle is, and they leave with Chiana in tow. On their walk, Talali explains that she and her Kaili followers do not trust the Grangie to share Trevira with them, and there are Grangie who do not trust the Kaili and also want to stop the peace agreement. The two anti-peace groups are working together to stop the signing. They are dressing up like each other and attacking their own people. Despite the attacks, the leaders are going ahead with the signing anyway. Talali says they need to stop the signing, so they come up with a new plan to take out the satellite station in orbit around both worlds, where the peace signing is about to take place. Being the consummate thief, Chiana is able to produce a tool from her gloves and picks the lock holding her. Free, she knocks a few of her captors down and makes good her escape. They let her go since they need to get to the transport pod in time to fly to the satellite and destroy the satellite and the leaders about to sign the agreement. They destroy the satellite just after the treaty is signed. The explosion can be seen from both worlds. The traitorous leaders of the anti-peace factions point to the explosions as proof the other side cannot be trusted. The fires of war are burning out of control as the Gurangi leader screams, "Let there be war!" To be continued.
That was it was a cool page spread, the whole explosion of the space station. It's a kind of a cool look of a space station with all the little atmosphere balls. I spent a lot of time on this thing just trying to figure out what it was that I was looking at.
Oh, the space station?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, what are those balls? Are they like little atmosphere domes or something? The blue ones?
Yeah, right. So I completely agree with you. So it looks like a long gray metallic thing with lots of spiky stuff coming out. And then it's surrounded by these egg-shaped blue balls. I don't know what it is.
And those two, like, shuttlecrafts that are heading towards it, I mean, those are Moya's shuttle pods and coming from each planet?
Well, there's only one. Okay. That's an excellent question, because there's only one shuttle pod.
Well, there was one on each planet, right?
Well, yeah, but did they establish that they took Dargo and Aaron's? Because if they did, I missed it. And I read this thing a couple times.
Right.
So that's a good point. Maybe you're right about that. But we know how the Kaili people took it, Talali or whatever. So we were intimately involved in the details of that. You're right. There is a second shuttle inbound from a different vector. And I think maybe later in the book, it says something about Dargo and Aaron not being able to find the shuttle or something.
Right. Yeah, I think so too.
But I don't remember ahead of time how the Gurangi could have got their hands on the shuttle. Unless they got it through Rigel? I don't know.
Well, yeah, Rigel doesn't seem to care. he probably gave it to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nigel.
Rigel's a piece of work, isn't he? he's Dr. Smith. He's like Dr. Smith.
Yeah, that's a good point. But worse.
Yeah. He's a spoiled ruler who does not have a way to get his way anymore. So.
Right. So let's just say both people, because they're obviously communicating with each other, these two like fringe groups.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they both came up with the same plan. I'm going to attack myself and pretend to be you know,
they're coordinating with each other.
Right.
Yeah.
As opposed to really attacking the other people. I mean, it just seems like a hard pill to swallow when you're telling your followers, all right, I want you to dress up as them and then come attack us versus
your own people.
Attack your family so that we can keep this war going on, as opposed to go over there and attack those people. And then they're going to, and then you know that they're going to come over here and attack you at the same time to justify it. I do not like that plan.
Well, doesn't it remind you a little bit of Star Trek VI?
Star Trek VI.
The Undiscovered
Country. Well, a little bit. I mean, the Klingons?
The Klingons. So there were people from the Klingon side and there were people from the Federation side. That admiral, I forgot the admiral's name.
Right.
That didn't want there to be peace. Cartwright. I think you're right. I think you are correct. He didn't want there to be peace because he didn't trust the other side. But they trusted each other enough to try to torpedo the peace signing.
Peace accord, yeah.
Yeah. So the story very much reminded me of Star Trek VI.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, dressing up as each other. And then attacking your people, killing people. I mean, I had an idea that this Tulua, whatever, I mean, I had the impression that she was like pretty high up in the leadership. I mean, not the king or the queen or anything like that, but you know, and they killed her. Mm-hmm. And maybe they killed her because she was such a supporter of the peace process. But yeah, it seems like you're people too easy. I mean, that daughter. Oh, I do not like her.
No, I don't either.
No, she's just not a good person.
She's almost as bad as Rigel. Almost.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least Rigel isn't killing anybody himself, but this Tallulah or whatever her name is, man, she is willing to kill anybody, including her own mother.
Right.
That's bad.
Yeah.
That is bad.
And then definitely, I mean, we're talking about things reminding us of other things. The whole exploding the space station during the peace accord reminded me of Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, when the Cylons come back and destroy the space station the peace was going to be signed in.
Yeah.
And then they went ahead and attacked the colonies.
Exactly, right. So in the original one, there was one guy that would show up every year. It's in some kind of a space station or something. And then the Cylons never showed up. And then every year he'd come back and no one ever showed up. And then finally he shows up again and they do, and the Cylons do show up and blow the thing to bits. So that's
how it was in the original one. That was the reboot, right?
Oh, that was the original series. That was the original.
Well, that was the miniseries too.
I don't remember how the reboot did it. So it like you described it.
Yeah, I mean exactly the way you described it.
A peace signing ceremony.
Yeah, that they would come and do every year, and then, like you said, the Cylons never showed up until that last one, and then they.
Okay, so they did it the same way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, that just reminded me of that. So. But yeah, I just don't get the. I mean, so they both really want this holy land, this holy planet. Yeah. They both think that it was promised to them by their gods, and they're at war with it.
Yeah.
But they have interstellar travel. Both of them aren't native to these two planets, so they both came from somewhere else, landed on these planets, can still travel to and from each other to attack.
Apparently.
And they've agreed to not go to the holy planet until... they can make
does that sound together. Unlikely or what?
Yeah, I would imagine. I mean, especially with all this backstabbing, I really find it hard to believe that nobody has secretly gone over to the holy planet.
Yeah. And not only that, they 1,000 years and nobody realizes that planet is uninhabited because it's lifeless. I mean, it's like a desert dirt ball.
Right. No probes. And it's like, no scans.
That Kylie place is the place they should be hanging out. That looks like a paradise.
Yeah, I know. And I'm assuming that the other one probably looked like that when they first landed there, and they've just industrialized it to hell.
Yeah, probably.
Anyways. Anywho,
so talk about, you got a planet, you got planets already to live in, and you're obsessed with this other thing.
Right.
You know, this third planet that is actually no bargain.
Right. So. Which I do get. I mean, I do get the whole religious fervor to want it for your own, right? I mean, we obviously seen that with the Crusades and all that stuff that we had here in the real world that were kind of the same way. But yeah, just man. And why did they need the shuttle pods? Because they obviously can fly to the space station without help.
Exactly. Well, they built a space station. Their leaders just went there to sign the thing. Mm-hmm. You've got ships. And by the way, if you got, I mean, you know how far away Mars is from Earth,
right?
They said that this space station goes around both worlds. How does it go around both worlds? I mean, you know how planets, you know, go around the sun, and you could be on completely opposite sides of the sun at any particular point in time, or you could be kind of lined up.
Right.
How would you have a space station that goes around both planets? I don't get that.
It's been doing it for 1,000 years, so maybe just, you know, whenever they do get close enough, it jumps over to the other's orbit. I don't know.
or do they orbit, or do the planets orbit around each other? Which I don't even know like how possible.
Romulus and Remus thing. Ooh, good point.
Orbit around each other?
I don't know.
Okay. But, you know, obviously, and it doesn't have to be this way in every star system, but I mean, there's a lot of distance between Venus and us and Mars and us. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if they're too terribly close, they will pull on each other and smash into each other at some point.
Exactly. They're going to have some distance between each other, I would think. But anyway, right. And yeah, you're completely right. The blue and then the yellow like eggs that are out there around the space station. That makes no sense, whatever it is.
Yeah, I don't know what the yellow ones are for sure.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, so Crichton gets a little action here, huh? Isn't that kind of forced? I think it's forced.
Nah, they're in love.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I do find it funny that they kind of give him a hard time. Like, why are you acting so weird about it?
Well, Zan is.
Right. Well, and the mom, too. Right? I mean, it was the mom that he was with, right?
Yeah, it was the mom he was with.
She didn't seem to be bothered by it.
No, she seemed to be just fine with it. Yeah.
Yeah, Crichton was the only one acting weird.
Oh, acting weird. Well, I mean, if you were in that situation, I think you'd be acting weird.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of weird.
Because we're humans.
Exactly. We
have that human sensibility.
We're humans. That's right.
So what do you think of the artwork? Do you like it?
Oh, I think the artwork's really good. The characters are drawn. They look very much like the, on most panels, they look very much like the actors. So mm-hmm. That's good work there. I think the two alien races look good. I mean, the Kylie are just people, basically.
With no irises, just white eyes.
Right, exactly. And then we've got the Garangi that just, you know, big blue guys. But they look fine. They look good. Technology looks pretty good. Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, they did take every opportunity to draw Chiana in a sexy way. I'll say that.
Right. Yeah, a lot of butt shots of her.
Yeah.
Especially in the next issue. Just like, really?
Yes.
You couldn't think of another angle to draw that.
Exactly. And they got her tied up. But they've got her tied up in some kind of sadomasochistic pose or something.
Right.
It's like, you're doing that on purpose. I'm sorry. You're doing that
on purpose. I mean, that was kind of her character on the show, though, too.
It was. I mean, she was 7 of 9. You know, she was T'Pol. You know,
yeah,
she
but the difference
was the
sexy that
one.
She was leaning into it because that was also her character, was that she was a free-loving type of character. Her whole species was.
Yeah, but yeah, I completely agree with that. But I'm just saying, she's the token sexy one they
right.
had on there.
Right.
I don't know if they tried to do something like that with Zan at the beginning, before Chiana came along, but they really leaned into it with Chiana.
Right, when it became her whole character.
Mostly.
Well, even the backup story in this, I mean, the whole thing is about they're wanting to, I mean, spoiler, but we're not going to review it. But the whole purpose of that storyline was that they're going to pass a plague mm-hmm. by giving a couple of them this contagion, and then they're going to have
it's
a whole
like a
bunch of sex
disease.
With everybody and then pass it on to everybody. So everybody is going to basically destroy the whole species or whatever by boinking. So it's just like
by boinking, and there's
that's
even,
her whole character is just that we love to have sex.
And Chiana's brother's best friend or something,
right?
She's reunited with him, and apparently they thought each other were pretty spicy stuff, and they are actually about, you know. Shirts are off and they're ready to do the deed, and then some things happen that stop that from happening.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that's a lot of sex in that thing.
Right.
I can see if I had that comic book and my mother was looking through it, she would not be happy about that. those particular panels.
Right. Right.
But I was fine with it.
But yeah, that, I mean, just to really, really lean into, that's part of her character, is this free loving type, sex pot type character.
Mm-hmm.
In a skin type uniform.
Yes. Yeah. Showing, you know, midriff skin and whatever else.
Right. Right. All right. Anything else for this issue? I know that we've kind of been.
I don't think so.
I will say, as far as the artwork goes, I really like that the shots of like Dargo using his gun sword.
Oh, okay. That was kind of cool. Yeah. Yeah. But, when Chiana's getting the mind meld against her will.
Yeah, that's pretty cool looking.
That's, you know, like white and red variations on red are the only colors. And that's, I mean, she's being violated mentally by this.
Right.
Absolute really, sicko.
Yeah. Really reminded me of that,
like that character.
Mind meld episode in Enterprise when T'Pol gets mind melded against her will.
Oh, right. Right, right, right. Yep. Anyway. Cool. Let's find out how the gang is able to resolve this. Or will they be able to?
I bet they do.
Okay. Okay. Let's find out.
Let's find out, though. All right, so this is War Torn issue number 2. This has a cover date of May of 2002. All of the art staff for the War Torn story is the same, except colors here are by Dan Brown. So there's only one cover, and it is just photos of the main cast. We have Erin in the front with her Peacekeeper pistol. And then behind her, we see Crichton and Dargo. And then behind them, we see Moya flying through space. And this issue is entitled Paradise Lost. All right, here we go. So Rigel is now playing both sides of his self-appointed dominar of both the Kylie and the Garengar planets. I know I'm mispronouncing everything, but just go with it. For whatever reason, he keeps promoting that they need to fight each other. I'm thinking maybe this is just because, you know, there's always money in war and he thinks that he's going to profit from it. But he keeps promoting that they need to grab their weapons and get ready instead of doing the peace treaty, which maybe at this point they know that it's already been blown up and that. No, I don't think he knows at this point. But anyways, we, the reader, knows that there's not going to be any peace because of the sabotage. Each side seems to be attacking the other, and as we know, it's really them attacking themselves dressed up as the other people. Our two parties are almost killed, but they are able to eventually find out what's going on. While this is going on, Cheyenne is separated from the group because Crichton and Zan leave the planet, and she's not able to get onto the escape pod in time. Rigel is still MIA because he's trying to manipulate all the locals and he's getting some incentive to stay. There is a scene with him and three very naked females. So obviously he wants to stick around. So all the others are able to get back to Moya and they regroup and they plan out their next strategy. Cheyenne is eventually able to contact Crichton, and as she's telling him what's going on, she's then captured again by Tala Lee, who, come to find out, is not dead. She did not take the shuttle pod up to the space station like they thought. She sent a subordinate. She's about to execute Cheyenne when the cavalry arrives and they save her. Meanwhile, Rigel learns about the all-out attacks that are being launched, and he opens up his communication and also requests a rescue. Once everybody's safe aboard Moya, they travel to the Holy Planet, which is where both sides claim they got invitations from God to have that as their own planet. Once they're there, they find a crashed ship. They fix the communication device that was on the ship and discover that the message is actually an SOS. So it's not an invitation from God. It was just an SOS from a crashed ship. Soon, both sides arrive, and they, too, learn the truth. Instead of this bringing everybody together, they instead destroy the message and vow to fight each other forever. Moya is able to get everybody aboard and Starburst out of there, leaving the team exactly the way they were before this issue started. So they're lost in space and trying to find some star charts to get back home. Meanwhile, the two planets are now involved in a much bloodier war than they were before the group arrived. The end.
What a happy ending.
So Jeez. Is it their fault? Is it their fault? Or would this have still happened whether they
showed up? This would have happened anyway.
I don't know, man. I keep going back and going through it, and I keep wondering, is it because Rigel was stirring them up, both sides, that it got as much traction as it did?
Before Rigel was doing what he was doing, Tali and whoever her opposite number on the Grangy side, they were doing all this stuff. They were planning all this stuff.
But that was like in the background. But he was actually communicating with the leaders and saying, oh, no, you need to grab your weapons. And I don't know. It seemed like because he was stirring it up and then these like little fringe groups was able to do what they wanted to do, that it like built up into something much bigger. And they gave the shuttle pods that ended up destroying the space station. So, again, I don't know the Crichton team caused it all, if any. You know what I mean? It's just like it's really left ambiguous as what would have happened if they never showed up to me.
I think the fringe groups trying to stop the signature, they would have just been doing all the same crap. Mm-hmm. I think they would have been doing anything, literally anything, including mommy's side, to be able to stop the peace signature. And they would have found a way to do it without the shuttles. And by the way, it looks like their shuttles are like spheres. So I'm just looking at...
Well, one of them are, yeah.
The Kylie. The Kylie, I think they use these like metal blue-gray spheres.
Right.
Because where Crichton is trading his pistol for a ship, which seems like a hell of a deal to me. I mean, you can see a whole bunch of like orbs getting ready to land or something. At least I think that's what those were.
Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. And it reminded me of the sphere from, what was that horror movie called? Phantoms? Is that it?
Phantasm.
Yeah.
What an awesome movie.
The tall man who had those spheres that would come out and drill into your brain.
Exactly. So you got these like softball sized balls flying around, and then these nasty razor like blades would come out of them, which suddenly like chung chung come out and dive into your forehead.
Right.
And that was a good movie.
Yeah, but then wasn't there a shot where there's some shots where these spheres look completely spherical, but then I thought there was another shot where it looked like they had little protrusions coming out.
Comic book?
Yeah, I thought so. And that's why when I was reading it, I was like, oh man, those look like the... But I can't find it now, so maybe I just made that part up when I was reading it.
I don't know about... I don't know, maybe. And I'm just kind of wondering if they're silver, blue silver steel ball things, is there shuttles? Is that the blue in those ovals that were around the space station?
So maybe like are one group and the orange ones were another group?
Well, but in that other issue, they were blue. Blue? Were they blue? I think they were blue. And then like kind of a caramel yellow.
Right.
That's what was around the space stations. So I don't know.
But the craft, they were so big. Yeah, and the craft that keep attacking, I mean, they look like little boxes, right? With like a bunch of girders and stuff.
They look like drones. They look like crappy Earth, crappy like metal tubes, all kind of welded together into some kind of a frame, and then they put the computer module and the weapons and stuff. They look very rudimentary.
Right.
Not high tech. Not high tech, like blue orbs that have no obvious external markings of propulsion or anything.
Right. Yeah. So I did look. It's issue one that shows like the back end of those spheres. So I'm not quite sure if that's supposed to be like some sort of docking mechanism or if so they can change shape. Hold on.
There are a lot of pages in these issues.
Yeah, there's a lot of pages. Hold on. They're not numbered. So I don't
matter.
It's issue one when they're, after Dargo's, it's like the page before Dargo's using his cannon,
his sword gun.
Yeah. If that helps.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. So that's the silver orb, but it's got like, it's almost like a sharp cape is flying out the back of it.
Right. And then when I saw him in issue two, I was like, oh, okay, so that back end must somehow get absorbed into the orb while it's flying. I don't know. Or maybe it was just
it's deployed somehow. Something.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
That's why I was thinking Phantasm, just because sometimes it had a back end and sometimes it didn't.
Right.
And speaking of back end, this is the one that has her butt as the main focus of many, many, many panels.
Oh, yeah.
This issue.
Well, how about that one panel where she's like climbing up a rope or something and she looks like she's either naked or in some kind of leotard?
I spent a lot of time on that page and it felt weird trying to focus on it so much. But yeah, why color her that way? I mean, all the other ones, she's colored, that she's wearing black pants and a black tube top. But in that one panel, she looks like she's completely naked for no reason.
Well, there's a reason.
And it's the page right after Rigel's with all those naked blue women.
Yeah.
So when I first read it, I thought it was one of those blue women were like escaping him or something. And then I'm like, oh, no, I think that is supposed to be Cheyenne. So,
yeah,
why she's drawn that way, I have no idea. I mean, I think
Leaning into the sexy, sexy.
It's just weird coloring that they wouldn't color her. The pattern on her pants. They're just all her flesh toned.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then there's a lot of shots where she's like jumping over crevasses and stuff. And of course the camera's underneath.
Crotch shot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, man, this is.
Yep.
I guess that's what sold in the 90s and early 2000s. It still sells now. So
sells.
It still sells now.
Exactly. So how'd you like the pistol packing saving operation where Aaron and Crichton are both pistol packing mama and daddies, and they're like shooting like 30 people. and apparently they don't get touched once. Are these people?
I kind of felt bad. Because I don't even know if they have guns. I mean, I know they can mind meld and shoot electricity or whatever, but it's just like they just jump in there and start mowing them down.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is cool and everything, but come on. And she is a peacekeeper. I mean, she's a soldier. Crichton isn't. He's an astronaut.
Right.
But, you know, but they're in there, you know, rappelling down on vines and picking up Chiana and doing the heroic thing.
Tarzan style.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that shot where he's swinging and he grabs her, I don't even think Aaron's holding on to anything. It looks like she's just free falling, holding two guns.
Yeah, that's probably it. And exactly how is he holding her? I guess it has to be his left arm around her back.
Right.
Okay, I gotta mention the guns.
Okay, go for it.
It's my thing. Okay, so they pretty consistently, these two issues, show the Peacekeeper pulse pistols with little like clips sticking out of the front bottom of them. So it looks like it's, you know, like some kind of a battery pack or something, or some kind of ammo. Everything else was done so well in this thing that it looks accurate to the TV show. That is a detail that is not right. It's not consistent with the TV show.
Really?
So, yeah.
I mean, even on the cover, the picture of her on the cover has one of those. Which part's not accurate?
Yeah, if you look it up, you'll see that there is a part that's in front of the trigger, but it is not a clippy thing at all. It's just part of the shape of the gun. There is no clip in the front. Yeah.
I'm not understanding the difference. Sorry.
Well, this looks like there's a removable clip in the front, and that's not what's in the show. The guns are not like that. You can even look at Aaron's. Aaron's gun is not the same. That photograph, that's the right way, but that is not what this is showing. This is showing something that comes down pretty far, and it looks like it's a clip that you can change. Especially look at the thing that the guy who's going to take Crichton's gun and let him borrow the spaceship, the shuttle. That's totally wrong. Hmm. And you may not understand the subtleties of this, my friend, but if you go ahead and just do a quick search, Farscape, Peacekeeper, Pulse Pistol, whatever, and you look at images, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Anyway. And of course, I have one of these, so I'm very familiar with the prop. Anyway, it's a little
And they
off.
Only had the one gun? There wasn't any...
Well, Crichton normally has Winona. So he usually has the one gun. But, you know, obviously they had to do their commando thing here. So somehow they each got an extra gun. And actually, I don't think Aaron used two guns normally. I know Crichton.
I'm just
did.
Saying there was only one style that the show used.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Well, at least as far as the pistols were concerned. And again, this was, again, Crichton's in his black t-shirt, so that's indicative of the earlier seasons. So, anywho, just want to bring that up. It looks cool. You know, I always like their pistols. They were pretty cool. Big, heavy-looking things.
Right. Now, remind me, did they shoot, like, little beams of light like Star Wars, or how did they fire in the show?
It's more like Star Wars. It's not a beam. It's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like laser bullets.
Okay. So it actually showed the blaster bolt or whatever.
Yes.
It wasn't like a traditional gun where you just see where it hits because of the sparks.
No, I think they went the Star Wars route.
Good. Yeah. It's been a while since I watched the show.
Yeah.
I really liked it for a long time. But
yeah,
that's been a while.
Me
I used
too,
to have them all
too,
on DVD, too. But I let some of I gave them away several years ago, and I couldn't find it streaming. I didn't look super hard, but I don't know if the show's hard to find now or I just didn't look right in the right place.
Yeah, I don't know. I would imagine it's the kind of thing you get on Amazon pretty easily, but it is an older show. And it wasn't like it was, I mean, it was a popular show, but, you know, not a household name. I mean, if you weren't into sci-fi, most people wouldn't know what you're talking about.
Right.
But where most people know Star Trek and Star Wars and things like that. But a lot of people probably don't know Firefly, but that was on only one season, which was totally unfair.
It was unfair.
That was terrible. Anywho, so in the end, the bottom line is they weren't able to save anybody, mm-mm. Which is like, that's the way things go sometimes.
Like I said, I think this whole solar system is much worse off than if they would have just not shown up, in my opinion. It might have still gone that way, but I just still see Rigel as the instigator of the war.
Yeah, and I don't think Rigel has anything to do with what the factions were doing.
Right. I think on factions. A smaller scale, I agree with you. Because, I mean, they already had this plan in motion, but
right.
I don't know. I just think that he might have...
He probably did stir the pot.
Right.
He stirred the pot. But
especially when he was telling, like, the upper-ups, oh, you shouldn't sign a peace treaty. And then, of course, when they actually blew up the space station,
conquer them.
Then of course they're like, oh man, this guy's right. We should go to war. And even when and it's a very non-Star Trek thing, right? When in Star Trek, if both sides find out that their god is really just a SOS, that would have brought them together, and they would have
exactly.
But this is like
it no, has a lesson.
We're still gonna war, even exactly. more than we were before.
Well, because Star Trek, more often than not, old Trek anyway, was trying to. It was a morality play, a morality tale, and in the end, the good guys were the good guys, and you know things were usually pretty okay by the end of the episode, although there were some exceptions. There was that one with Tyree and the Magatu, and that one where that was not resolved by the end. The Klingons and the Federation were just given them more powerful weapons.
Right, the whole Cold War.
So, exactly.
Vietnam War analogy.
Vietnam thing, exactly. Right. So, in the end, that didn't resolve too well, but most of them did resolve. At least the characters were on a path to being back to a more healthy situation, even if it wasn't, even if you didn't see all of it happen in the end of the, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, whatever. But this show... the story, definitely, it's like, hey, a little more realistic. I mean, what are they going to do? They're just like five people on a ship, or five or right. six people on a ship. It's like, what are they going to do in the end? They don't have resources and things like that. Come on.
Right. There's no Cerritos that's going to show up after no. they leave for second contact.
Exactly. No Cerritos. And I might have mentioned this before, but in Torchwood... there was just such an excellent episode where Captain Jack and the team from Torchwood, in the end, they try to stop this demon alien. I forgot it was what it was exactly, but they were grabbing kids. And by the end of the episode, the Torchwood gang just realized that they were outmatched and they couldn't do anything to stop it. So that's how it ended. And it was like, oh my God, they couldn't do anything to stop it. Well, they couldn't do anything to stop it. They're going to end it this way? And it was like, thinking about it more, it was like, yeah, that sometimes you run into things you can't do anything about. Anyway.
Right. Was that the miniseries that had Captain Jack's grandkids?
Children of Earth?
Yeah.
No. That was an episode. I always thought that they might have taken the idea for that episode and expanded it into that miniseries. Because they did, so Torchwood, of course, which was a Doctor Who spinoff, BBC, Captain Jack, you know, infinitely living guy, alien, omnisexual, who led a ragtag group called Torchwood. And I thought that was a great show. And that miniseries, Children of Earth, and then there was a second one. I think they produced that in coordination with US cable TV channel.
Right. Yep.
Showtime or I don't know who it was exactly. I don't recall. But they tried to keep that going. But I guess it didn't sell very well.
So. Right. Yeah, anytime Doctor Who tries to hook up with the U.S., it never goes well.
It just doesn't go well. Like that movie.
The Eighth Doctor movie, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah,
because it did really bad here.
Yeah.
It didn't continue, even though it did really good in the U.S., UK. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to continue it, but because it was now co-owned by USA Network. USA Network was like, we don't want to continue it, and we're not going to sell you back the rights, so.
Oh, well, that sucks.
Yeah, no, it was horrible.
And now, is it Disney who's associated with the new Doctor Who?
Yep, Disney. For international distribution.
There you go. Anyway. Okay. Well, back to this comic. I think it's good. I liked it. It was a little, it had a lot of details. It had a lot of, you and I spoke about this before the, before we started recording. There was a lot of things going on here. It's like, why did that happen? And then you'd go back and sometimes it was explained and sometimes it wasn't, in my opinion.
And I'll be honest, it seems like they, it almost seemed like they were being beamed for a lot of times, because it'd be like they would have a conversation and then they would be on the planet again. You know, they were on Moya and then suddenly they were on the planet continuing that conversation. I was like, oh, did they teleport? I don't remember them having teleportation.
They don't have teleportation.
It just seemed like that was really inconsistent as far as giving them travel time and things like that. Because, you know, just because you have spaceships doesn't mean your shuttle pod goes from the surface to the orbit instantaneously.
Right. Exactly.
It's not supersonic, or
it just
even if it was
going.
Supersonic, it would still take some time.
Yeah, exactly. The whole idea that both two different people were dumb enough to misinterpret a distress beacon, a distress call, in the same way that it's some promised land or something. It just seems so unlikely.
Right.
So very unlikely. But anyway, it was like a Twilight Zone twist ending. So, you know, that's cool and everything. It's just that how likely is it that there people are going to be stupid enough to misinterpret it?
And what I didn't understand is that when they're on that planet, the holy planet, you know, it looks like there's like a bunch of like giant statues and things like that. So where did those come from? If none of
statues,
yeah,
I thought it was just a big huge ship.
Is it before they? Okay, never mind. No, this is when they're saving Cheyenne.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So yeah, they so built these giant. Tyree or yeah, Tyree yeah. Or whatever. Yeah, this is their temple or whatever. Okay, right. Never mind. So yeah, the spaceship itself just looks like a bunch of vines and almost something like from Alien, with a bunch of weird looking tentacle things is your structure of your ship.
The ship looks very organic.
Right.
And they really don't show you that much of it, quite frankly.
Mm-mm. But yeah,
very, very alien technology.
I did enjoy the book, even though I did have to go back and reread it quite a few times, because it did just seem weird. Just some of the jumping parts, just like, I don't know how we got here, you know? And I was like, all I did is turn the page. What's going on? And then also just some of the word balloons seemed to be placed in weird places where it was kind of hard to follow the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I thought, in my opinion.
In my humble opinion. Yeah, so. I agree.
But anyways, good stuff. And I enjoyed the backup story a lot.
The secondary story?
Yeah, so I guess her people are being, Cheyenne's people are being like persecuted or something, and so these are like refugees or whatever that end up sacrificing themselves once they know that they got the STD and they don't want to pass it on to anybody else.
And the people that organize the STD and all that kind of stuff that have the grand plan to get rid of these people, basically you know, wiping these peoples out, I guess, so they can take over more property. I mean, they're peacekeepers. I don't know if they ever actually came out and said that, but I'm pretty sure these are peacekeepers.
Those were peacekeepers? Okay.
I think.
I didn't recognize the uniforms or anything.
Well, neither did I. Because the peacekeepers were normally like 100%, you know, just human-looking guys.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's a good point, because all these, Chiana, of course, was always had really heavy makeup. So that she was like really, really, really light gray or like ghostly white or something, whatever. And not only are her people like that, but the guys that were persecuting them also are all really white.
Right.
So I could be wrong about that. They're probably not peacekeepers. They're probably.
But if it's their own race, then they're trying to.
From their own race. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, if they release this contagion out there, I mean, I guess it's a follow, it must be a follow-up from an episode, right? Because they say that she had the contagion at one point and was cured, so obviously that's a reference to an episode that I'm not familiar with or don't remember. But well, I would think that if you're releasing a contagion out on your own species, there's a risk that you would end up getting it too.
Well, there is a risk, but if it's really just transmitted through, you know, swapping saliva and other juices, bodily fluids, you know, maybe not as much. But, yep, that always is a danger. Now, something that I didn't get at the end is Chiana is with all these other people from her race, these, quote, rebels, whatever. And they're on a ship. Mm-hmm. And the boyfriend, the brother's friend, who she almost boinked, he knocks her out. And
putting a spike in her brain.
I know. That looks kind of nasty, doesn't it? But I guess it was it her that had the idea that they want to, you know, go ahead and blow up the source of this, the space station where I guess they had engineered the virus or whatever and the source of it, basically. And so they knock her out because she's not infected, apparently, or she's been cured, whatever.
Right.
But the rest of them are supposedly, you know, they got it and they're going to die anyway. And so they knock her out and they put her where?
In a life pod? Like an escape pod or something, yeah.
Yeah. So I figured it had to be an escape pod of some kind because that is, doesn't look like that big a ship. It's just that she's in the thing and it kind of looks biggish because it almost looks like she's definitely looking through a big transparent aluminum or whatever. Window at the ship plowing into this space station,
right,
and blowing everything up, and then Moya pops out of a starburst to pick her up.
Yeah,
It just looks. I just thought, like, where is she? I mean, this does not look like any of the pod Sisko was in. You know, when he left his ship during Wolf 359 or anything. This looks kind of roomy.
Right.
Well, I know, but it just looked roomy. I mean, if you had a shuttle pod, an escape pod, would you have a big, huge glass window like that? I don't know.
Yeah. So you could see. Whatever. So you could see it explode. But yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah, and it's just lucky just that Moya shows up instead of her starving to death out there in a pod.
Well, exactly. So this shuttle pod or this life thing that she's in somehow magically, it probably does not have FTL or anything. So, mm-mm. Okay, just want to mention that. Okay, so the B story was pretty good.
Yep, both of them are good.
Yeah. Okay, well, this was great. This was fun. I think on and off we've mentioned the idea of doing Farscape, so I'm glad we finally did it.
Right. Right. I'm just kind of sad it didn't have Scorpius, because I know that's usually why we talk about it, is because you go on and on about how much you love Scorpius. Ah! And well, rightly so, because it's cool. He looks so cool.
Oh, he's great. And that Pilgrim, the actor that plays him, he's like perfect. He just has a perfect voice for it.
Right.
And as we know, from Darth Vader, the voice makes a big difference.
Yep. So, right. Well, that was it for Farscape, though. Although I wouldn't mind revisiting it if you're up for it.
Yeah, me too. There are a lot of other books that we have, but some of them are more like multi-parters. I mean, not just two, more like five or four. So.
Right.
It's a little bit more of a commitment if you want to get to the end of them.
And I did want to mention this one. So this was the only things that DC/Wildstorm did for Farscape. Mm-hmm. It never got reprinted. It's not digital. It's pre-digital. So if you do want to read this book, you have to, look it up and buy it online. Or I guess you could go to a comic book shop and find it. But yeah, it'll set you back like $3 or $4 each. They're not incredibly expensive.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not on Comixology?
Nope. You have to You have to read it the old school way.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Okay. Well, so what's happening in episode 441, Donovan?
Well, we can do Lower Decks. We got issues number 1 and 2 of the new ongoing Lower Decks series.
Okay. It's because we don't have Defiant 22 and...
Nope.
27
come out,
haven't come out
They come
yet.
Out at the beginning of next year. So as of right now, Lower Decks 1 and 2, issue 2 just came out this week. So we get to we can read that next week.
Let's do that.
At least it'll be Star Trek and not some other franchise trying to take away our time.
Exactly. And now that the last episodes for the last season of Lower Decks has been broadcast, dropped.
Yep, sad. Sad.
It is sad. I'm still working my way through them. I haven't watched all of them yet, but I did just I just did watch the Data's Head episode, so that's always fun. And I had heard something about there possibly being a movie, a Lower Decks movie. Now that might be just something that's on streaming service. I mean, not in the theaters.
Yeah, but I'd heard be okay that with
there
that.
Might be a movie.
Yeah, I've heard that too. But I don't know how the series ends because I haven't watched the final yet. So I will by next week when we review these two books.
Actually, that's probably a good topic. Of course, we do have a backlog of editing. So by the time it gets out there, this will be very past. But that would be kind of interesting if we're able to finish the series. I think I've only got 3 more episodes to watch.
Yeah, if you watch Data's Head, you're close to the end.
Yeah. So,
all right.
Let's discuss.
Gives us something to talk about next week.
Sounds good. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for joining us on the review.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at first name ST Comic, second name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.